afternoon, and welcome to the second half of We the People Radio on May 4th, 2025. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And we are just fresh off an hour with Salvador Litvak. He's a comedian, but he was a serious guy. We talked about a lot of serious stuff. Wrote a book called Let My People Laugh, and he has a film coming out, Guns and Moses. So if you missed the first hour, go to the archive at We the People Radio. .us. It's all on there. Our guest this hour, so interesting that they both wound up on the same day too, is Dr. Carol Lieberman. She is the author of Lions, Tigers, and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror at Schools, Cafes, Hospitals, Bookstores, Helping Families Cope with Terrorism. It won the Paris, it won at the Paris Book Festival. She is an MD. And an MPH, Master of Something or Other. I don't know what that means exactly. She's going to tell us. She is known worldwide as America's psychiatrist. She is the host of Dr. Carol's Couch on VoiceAmerica.com. That's fun. And the Terrorist Therapist Podcast. Say that five times fast. She is a forensic psychiatrist, expert witness, best-selling award-winning author of four books, two on terrorism, two on relationships. And I'm not even going to go on with the rest of it because I want her to talk to us some more. Protesters are terrorist pawns and open floodgates to jihad in our streets. That was the article they sent me, and I'm like, I don't know who she is, but I need to get her on here. So, Dr. Carol, Dr. Lieberman, I don't know what we call you, and what is an MPH, by the way?
Yes, it's a master's of public health.
Ah, public health, darn it. I got all pleased with myself. I got the MD part. I got the terrorist therapist, and I didn't bungle that. And then it was like, MPH, what the heck is an MPH? Miles per hour, that was the first thing that went through my head, obviously. Obviously, I was kind of screwed at that point.
Yes, after I got my MD, I then later on got a master's in public health. Because I'm interested in helping people, not just people in my office, you know, who I treat as a psychiatrist, but helping people in general with health, with psychiatric health, psychological health, and health, like during COVID, for example. I did a health campaign on what people can do to stay healthy during COVID, other than taking the vaccine.
Yeah, alternate ideas, like the part where you stay alive.
Right.
That's turned out all of us who were branded as, heretics and kooks and conspiracy theorists. Kind of turns out we weren't all that dumb after all.
That's right.
Well, we spoke with Sal, because he is a Harvard alum, and so part of his, you know, history was like, what has happened to my school, you know, with all these crazy protests? And your article was really quite good. The deportation of the, you know, what's-his-face, and your quote here, how sad that students at Ivy League colleges are the biggest dupes of terrorists and leftists. Figured that's a fairly decent jumping-off point for you.
Yes. And, you know, I went to Harvard, too, for one summer, taking organic chem. So I have some connections, some sad connections. And my daughter went to Barnard, you know, which is part of Columbia.
Yeah. And they've gone crazy, too.
And they are crazy, too, yes. And then, actually, you know, where I got my MPH and where I was on the clinical faculty was UCLA. And UCLA is crazy, too. You don't hear as much about UCLA as you do about, you know, Harvard and Columbia and so on. But UCLA was even crazier. So, you know, all of this is just, it is so hard to believe that this is happening in America. That the schools, Ivy League or not, you know, there are schools that aren't Ivy League that also are allowing these protesters to run rampant on their campus and to allow them to do all kinds of things to Jewish students, whether not just verbally but physically as well, keeping them out of the library, keeping them out, you know, doing all these, everything they can do, and they have been getting away with it. And so so it is a huge problem, and it's just shocking that this has been allowed to go on so as long as it has. And Trump, you know, is trying to stop it. I mean, you know, if you think about the three presidents of the colleges that were at the congressional hearing, you know, Harvard and let's see, I'm trying to remember, University of Pennsylvania and MIT, and they were asked, why are you allowing this and so on. And, you know, what they pretended then and what they're pretending ever since is that it's because of the First Amendment. But, you know, the First Amendment doesn't say that you can trespass or you can be violent or you can provoke people to commit hate crimes. None of that is protected in the First Amendment. And so it's just hiding, pretending that they don't know better. And really, one would hope that they do as presidents of these colleges. And it's still going on. And so now it's not just that, so what Trump is trying to do, you know, which was really clever and really, took a lot of courage and so on, but I wrote a thing, months ago about the things that you need to do to stop this. And of course, one of the things was, sending home the people with green cards, the student visas, and so on, who were involved in these protests. But they're taking them even beyond the schools because of the fact that they are, you know, that something is being done to try to stop them at the schools. So now the protesters are going other places. Like you might know, they went to Trump Tower, for example. They were protesting there. They were protesting in Manhattan, in the streets in Manhattan, in Times Square. And then they also protested at the ICE building in Washington, D.C. So, it's, you know, even taking them off the college campuses isn't going to be stopping them altogether. And the latest thing that they have been protesting about, they just find individual people or, you know, individual reasons, the reason du jour, and then they protest about it. And so Mahmoud Khalil was one of the latest ones that they're protesting his deportation. And, you know, it's just pretty outrageous. I mean, not only is it shocking that there is all this anti-Semitism being allowed to happen in America, but also, you know, that colleges, I mean, some of the best colleges, where you would think that they would be smart enough to not allow these kinds of things to happen, are allowing them to happen. And even, like, with the latest thing being that since Harvard, Harvard is just an example, and maybe it's one of the worst examples, but it's certainly not alone. But, you know, Harvard, not having kowtowed, not having given in to Trump for taking away their money, now he is having to change their tax status, you know, because I guess they figured out how they could get more money from their donors and so on. But, I mean, do you realize how they're missing the whole point? I mean, they're ignoring the whole point. The point isn't that they can get money elsewhere. The point is that they shouldn't be allowing all of this anti-Semitism to happen on their campus.
Yeah, no, you would think that would be obvious.
Yeah, and I think if you go to a foreign country and you get a green card, you're a guest, and you should abide by their rules. And if you do protest, particularly a government protest, I don't think you get to do that. You know, you don't go to somebody's house as a guest and create havoc and not get asked to leave. I don't understand why that is so hard for people to wrap their minds around, that you don't get to come here as a guest and then
leave.
Yeah,
but the part you left out was they broke in. They weren't really a guest. They were uninvited.
Well,
in a lot of cases.
Yeah, but some of them do have green cards. So
that's true.
So they're allowed to come in and study and work and so forth. But I don't think you get to protest the government that gave you the ability to come here and get an education, and
nothing happens,
and have no consequences. So I don't know. What do you say to that?
Well, of course, I totally agree. Yes, and there are varying, you know, the people who are protesting on these college campuses and off the campus, too, in these places, like I mentioned, Trump Tower and Times Square and Washington, D.C., it's a mixture of people. Some of them are the students at the schools. Some of them are paid by people like George Soros to participate in the protests, and they may not be students at the school. Some of them are even older than college students. And some of them have green cards, and some of them don't. And so it's a whole mixture.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it should have been, the real problem is that it should have been stopped from day one.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of, now that it's gone on, they sort of feel entitled.
Right.
This is part of school, you know, to spend time in the courtyard protesting. And it's really
well,
it
and
really
the tents and the like the just the grunge campouts on, you know, on the campus. So it's not even like they're marching around protesting, but then there's these weird encampments and there's all sorts of heinousness that goes on with that whole situation. We didn't get to ask Sal, who did graduate Harvard Law. He would have been the guy to ask, and I got distracted. I wanted to know, isn't there a rule against protesting with masks on? Didn't we do that?
Well,
isn't that a thing?
Well, I don't know if there was, but that has been one of the things that Trump has been trying to institute. I don't know, you know, how far back that goes, but I know recently there has an attempt has been made to make that part of it, that people aren't allowed to protest with masks. That is one of the ways to decrease this or discourage people from participating, because if they have masks, they can't be, even though they're on video and they're on photographs and so on, if they're in a mask, it's harder to find out who they are. And that was part of what they were doing.
Well, it also may not mess up your career opportunities in the future.
Right.
As a psychiatrist, because so we missed our opportunity to ask the lawyer about the laws about protesting with masks, but I don't want to blow it and miss the psychiatrist who could talk to us about why people protest with masks on. What's going on there?
It's a combination of what we were just talking about, not wanting to be identified.
Right.
And then also, it's kind of like, psychologically, it's like being a bad man, like in the West.
I
didn't think about that.
The bad men with the guns, you know, the outlaws, they would wear a mask.
That's
so
true.
It makes them feel more of an outlaw.
I apparently have never protested with a mask on. Or maybe I just didn't want to be an outlaw, or maybe I really was one, and I don't need to act that out now. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of interesting that they show up at these protests and they want to have a voice, but they don't want to be identified. That kind of counters the whole thing. I mean, if you have something important to say, say it and have a conversation about it, but don't hide your face when you say it.
I think it's called own it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Own your message.
Now, it's so interesting. Well, there's a lot of interesting parts, but a lot of, you know, it's horrible stuff. College protesters were not around, were not alive yet, were not born yet on 9/11. And
yes.
So it's really ironic that, like in Manhattan, for example, the very streets that they are protesting on, with or without masks, on 9/11, they would have been covered with ash and smoke and all of that. But because they weren't born yet, most of them, they don't have that feeling in their gut, in their heart, what it felt like on 9/11. And so this is all fun and games for them, you know, because they didn't have that shock and that terror and all of that. And so they don't get how serious this is. And plus, they don't get how these very protesters green card or not, I mean, if they're, for as long as they stay in America, they are at risk of terrorists. They don't get how terrorists want to kill Americans, want to kill not just Americans, want to kill anybody, anywhere, who are infidels, who don't believe in their Quran. And so you know, the very people who, especially like, you know, when Netanyahu came here and he spoke to Congress, he talked about, he gave us an example, the Gays for Gaza protesters.
Yeah.
And he said, Gays for Gaza are like chickens for KFC.
Yeah.
Because, you know, terrorists, Gaza and elsewhere, terrorists don't believe in and are very against any kind of LGBTQ plus. And so if they were in, if a terrorist came here and saw them and saw that they were gay and so on, well, it would be harder to do it here. But if they were in the Middle East, they'd throw them off the roof. And so it's so absurd to be protesting for somebody who wants to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. That just, it seems, it's hard to explain, actually. I think only through psychiatry can we truly know. We have to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Carol Lieberman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find this later, commercial-free and free to listen to at wethepeopleradio.us.
I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane. Nobody knows if it's something to bless or blame. So far I ain't found a rhyme or a reason to change. I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane.
Who is it?
I'd like to say that I don't have very many songs about craziness, but I really do. We're going to trot them all out for you today. So if you had a, I don't know, I mean, let's say you had somebody's parents who came to you, who said, look, my kids are like in the grips of this crazy death cult that thinks that, you know, they should waste their education protesting for people who hate them. What do you tell these people?
Yes, it's difficult. You know, there's all this peer pressure, for one thing. It's a whole variety. I mean, if some of the students, I mean, first of all, of course, it depends if it's a Jewish student, parents of a Jewish student, or a non-Jewish student, although certainly there are lots of non-Jewish students who are also terrified and sympathetic to what's going on, not anti-Semitic. There are various choices. One thing is, depending upon the college that your student was accepted into, if they haven't gone yet, some parents, some families have chosen to take a gap year in the hopes that by waiting a year, it won't be as bad by the next year. Now, you know,
how's that worked out?
Well, yeah, it's kind of questionable. I think it's different depending upon what school it is. But that was one solution. Another is to just have their kids, if they're Jewish, join, like there are Hillel organizations on a lot of college campuses, and that helps to give community support or group support, you know, to the Jewish students. Then, you know, some people have changed schools. There are some schools that are more affected by this than others. you know, those are, and then, you know, then there's also the choice of just hunkering down, just getting through it, you know, just, you know, trying to ignore what's going on around you. None of these solutions are great, but, you know, the thing is that, that it is an opportunity for some families to help their child get more knowledgeable about their religion. You know, if it's a child, a college student who hasn't really gotten much of a Jewish education, and therefore just feels like, you know, why is it worth it? I mean, why am I undergoing all of this? You know, just because is it worth it to be a Jew, kind of thing? And really, and you know, most Jewish college students do believe that it is, but for those, I mean, this is a time to sort of make one more proud of religion, of the Jewish religion. I mean, you know, of course, the truth is that all of this starts at home. I mean, the worst part of it is that there are some Jewish students or Jewish families, and more Jewish students, who because of peer pressure or whatever, there are some Jewish students in these encampments, you know, on the lawns of the colleges. And that of course is incredibly disappointing. And it has to do with parents, not giving their children from the time that they're super young, you know, from the time that they go to regular school, there are, in most synagogues, there are temple schools, you know, there are schools on the weekend for kids, to learn Hebrew or just to learn about the history of the Jews, all of that. I mean, I was born and bred in New York. And I went to a temple school from the time that I was, I don't know, five or something. And I got, it was a conservative temple, so I got confirmed, not bas mitzvah. But now I live in California, and I sent my daughter to school, temple school, from the time, you know, I think they started even earlier. And she was bas mitzvah. And then I went to Israel for her bas mitzvah, to have her be bas mitzvah in Israel. So it really has to do with how much Jewish parents inculcate their children with pride in their religion, with the beauty of it and all of that. If you don't do that, by the time they're in college, it's a little late.
Yeah. Well, and for all of the other people, you know, it's interesting to me that the protesting tribe is the one that flies under the banner of tolerance.
Yeah.
I mean, that irony I don't think is lost on anyone.
Yes. I mean, you know, and in part, for some of the people, besides the ones who are paid to be in the protests or who have green cards, you know, come from the Middle East, besides that, there are people who have been taught even earlier in school. They've been taught that there are only two kinds of people in the world. There are the oppressors and the oppressed. And so they identify with the oppressed, and so they think that the people in Gaza are oppressed, and therefore Israel is horrible because they're the oppressors. And then they extend it to Jews in general are oppressors. That's what they learn when they're really young in some of our schools,
mm-hmm.
our public schools. And so it's really, you know, and that's another thing. I'm really glad that Trump is trying to change things around, to sort of look into our public school education system. But I wanted to mention also that I was starting to say about how they weren't born during 9/11, and also part of the problem is that they were born a little after 9/11. All kids who were born after 9/11 grew up with parents who had been terribly impacted psychologically by 9/11. And in ways like feeling anxious, feeling afraid of going outside, feeling afraid of the world, And that anxiety got transmitted, got like by osmosis to their kids. And that has made this whole generation who were raised by 9/11 parents much more afraid of the world, much more eager to have Big Brother take care of them, you know, like socialism and communism and all of that. And they don't even know why, for the most part. If I said this is why, you know, you feel this way, I don't think most of them realize that or understand what I'm talking about, even because they weren't alive on 9/11. But you know, that is a big part of it for why, even not to do with Israel or for Jews or anything like that, just in general, before 10/7, this issue of wanting socialism, wanting communism, wanting a Big Brother to take care of them,
mm-hmm.
Has been around since, you know, since a very long time.
It's kind of a sad state of affairs that people are being silenced for their, you know, it's always a tough concept for me as a kid. You know, we asked the Jewish kids in our neighborhood in Connecticut, we'd ask them, like, well, what nationality are you? Because we were Irish Catholics, right? So, what nationality are you? And they'd say, well, we're Jewish. And I was like, yeah, but, like, what nationality are you? Well, we're Jewish.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's your religion. Right, but that's our nationality. And that was such a hard concept. That was really a very difficult concept for a kid. But that is a nationality, and it is also a religion. And I don't think that's widely understood. You know,
well,
they're literally going at the Jewish community on all fronts. And then there's the history. Well, you know, that goes without saying.
Well, and you know, what people, I mean, that's part of the problem too. Like Jews in America, some are more, some are Zionists, some are more sort of in love with or dedicated to Israel than others. I mean, when I was going through temple school, for example, or even just in synagogue and services, loving Israel was inbred into you. You know, mm-hmm. that was just part of being Jewish. But that's not the case with everybody, apparently, today, which is very sad. I mean, it was kind of shocking to me that people don't feel that kind of connection. I mean, of course, there are a lot of Jews who do. There are a lot of Christians who do and who have been donating and so on to Israel after 10/7. And, you know, so... something has to be done with
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away at how much support this gets from the left that is supporting it. I mean, that is the makeup on the left. It has a large Jewish following. And
well,
that also sort of doesn't make sense, but I get they see that as their... I don't know.
Well,
I guess I don't get it. I want to take that
back.
Well,
you know, the thing is, in the past, Jews were predominantly Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the left has taken over the Democratic Party, and there are still Jews in there scratching their heads thinking, well, my grandfather, you know, voted Democrat, and my grandmother did, so I guess I'm supposed to do that. But it's changed. They don't necessarily realize, not just Jews, but people in general don't realize how much the party has changed. Obviously, some do, and they've, you know, come to the middle or to the right. But I think a lot has to do with just history. When it was a party that was more about just like helping people and sort of in general. And a lot of Jewish people feel that way. I used to argue with my mother.
How'd that work out?
Voted, oh, she always voted Democrat. And when I was, you know, when I supported Trump, we used to get into arguments about that. But not arguments like people, like most of the people. I don't mean the typical kind of thing that's been happening in families where if you vote for the opposite candidate, like it's the end of families.
Yeah, so we're all required to hate each other then. Yeah, that part.
Right, right. Yeah. So we would make kind of jokes about it. I'm not so sure if she thought it was as funny as I did, but in any case. So yes, there are a lot of things that need to be fixed in America, and for example, the whole, you know, one of the things that needs to be fixed is that, you know, we haven't really gotten over COVID. We may have gotten over the spread of the disease, but the after effects are not over. It has left a very strange effect on us, and especially on kids. We were told during COVID that it would be, when it was over, everything would be wonderful. It would be better than before. And so when it was over, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and when it was over, it wasn't better than before. And a lot of people, I mean, we're all kind of in this existential sort of questionable space where we're still waiting for it to get better. And you know, that the confusion, especially with kids not going to school, mm-hmm. During COVID, the confusion that all of that caused, that has contributed to this too, to, you know, it also has contributed to teachers being able to talk kids into, you know, because kids were so unhappy. It made it easier for teachers to talk kids into deciding that the reason for their unhappiness was because they were born in the wrong body. And
yeah.
That's where all this trans and you know, being the opposite sex than to what you were born as and so on, because the kids were so confused. And so it was very easy to tell them, oh, well, I have the answer. You know, it's just this.
Yeah. Or the people who think they're a cat or a dog or a badger or
right.
whatever they
yes.
want to be these days. Yeah, those things are still kind of hard to explain, actually. I struggle
yeah.
with those. We've done some interesting programs on that, and some of the roots of that are not as obvious. There's been a subtle shift over time. You know, the idea of morphing the word gender with the word sex. And
mm-hmm.
all of us just thought it was so, you didn't have to read the word sex on a form because we were all a bunch of Puritans. But it turned out, no, there was kind of a long-range plan on the whole gender deal.
Mm.
That
uh-huh.
that was, they were going to make those synonyms, which they are not.
Right.
And, yeah, it's, I want, when we come back, how about this? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like you to talk about your book or whatever you want to talk about. But I do want to plug your book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My. Because it is smart to educate your kids on that. And so I think people feel like, well, 9/11 happened, but, you know, now it's kind of not really a big thing anymore. It is a big thing.
Yes.
It is a big thing.
Absolutely.
And without some tools, it'll be a bigger thing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So our guest is Dr. Carol Lieberman, and you're listening to We the People. You can find this after the fact at wethepeopleradio.us. Drag it out, Bill.
Oh, I try.
Drag it out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
While you're a part of Crack-A-Box Palace, do what the rest don't do. Don't face the fact that Crack-A-Box Palace may have no other choice than to deport you.
Song seems more fitting every time we play it. It is kind of funny because if you do understand this, you do feel like the crazy one. Maybe you should have another podcast, Dr. Lieberman, for those of us who do get it, who are being told that we're all crazy. We can have the You're Just Fine podcast.
There we go.
So your book is designed for kids. I realize kids come in all ages, but what was your target on this?
Well, 9/11 is what changed my life. I had already moved to California by the time 9/11 happened, but my daughter, as I mentioned, was at school at Barnard, so she was, you know, in the middle of Manhattan and the ashes and all that. I asked myself when this happened, what is the most important thing that I can do to help people? Because terrorism, I just knew, not that, to be honest, I never really, you know, studied terrorism or paid attention to terrorism, like in the news. That was one of the things. Terrorism and sports were things that I didn't really have to read about,
right?
I thought, in order to to cut down how much I had to pay attention to. But when 9/11 happened, I realized somehow that this was going to be the number one problem in our lifetime. And it is, although as you were saying before, a lot of people don't realize that. They are in denial. They think that 9/11 was one and done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is when I decided to devote myself to, first of all, you know, getting a good education in terrorism, and second of all, helping people, starting to help people with it. And so, of course, so I started by making an audio video program for airlines that airlines played in their in-flight entertainment, because remember, like, people were very afraid to fly after 9/11 for a while. And so I did that, and then I had a hotline that I helped people, you know, who were just feeling bad about the after the attack. And the next major thing that I did was my first book, Coping with Terrorism, Dreams Interrupted. I was asked to, a publisher in London had me write that book. I mean, I was looking for a publisher. They were looking for me. We found each other. And it was the one-year anniversary. This became the one-year anniversary book for London's 9/11, which was their 7/7/2005. So the book came out 7/7/2006. And I went over there and I, you know, did a lot of work, a lot of speeches and speaking engagements and media and so on, and helping them. I went to the cemeteries for the event that they had there and so on. And so then, my book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. My book started winning awards. It's won 5 awards altogether. So London and Paris and Hollywood and New York and a Mom's Choice Award. And so when it won in England, for example, in London, I went to London to get the award, and also I did a lot of speaking engagements. And I also went to Manchester because they had had a terror attack fairly recently. And so then when I won in Paris, I went to Paris and I did speaking engagements. Also, I donated the books to libraries in these places. And I spoke to people, you know, one-on-one at different engagements. And of course, America. And then for the past 4 years, I've been, I started 4 years ago. I don't know, the idea just came to me. Because I got so angry at how presidential administrations were not paying enough attention to 9/11, for the anniversary of 9/11. So I created a music video about 9/11 and why we should remember it and so on. And I had it going around on mobile billboards, you know, trucks playing the video on either side. And I also have it on my website.
I posted it on our page for today, too.
Oh,
it's really
great,
good.
Great. Thank you. Well, you know, the one that I did for last year, I sort of recreated it, the original one, because the original one was very warm and fuzzy. And last year, I realized we need more than warm and fuzzy. We need warnings. We need people to realize that terrorists are in our streets, including some of these protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made it a little more, you know, like to the point, to like, you know, wake up to what's going on. And then I also made one for the first anniversary of 10/7. And I put that on a mobile billboard, and that's on my website, too. So I wrote, I guess, around the same time, I wrote the book. And the reason I wrote it for children and their parents and teachers. The first half of the book is for grown-ups. And the second half is a picture book for kids. So it's all the highlights of terrorism. It's like everything that you ever wanted to know or didn't.
Yeah.
As the case may be. Not in a super scary way, but also not in a sugar-coated way. For example, I talk about what is a terrorist. A terrorist is like a bully on the playground. So I have a picture of that. Then I talk about Osama bin Laden being the most famous and worst terrorist. And all the highlights, I talk about why we have to, you know, go through the TSA at the airport and the underwear bomber and the shoe bomber, you know, all the classic parts of terrorism, you know, in the history of terrorism. And, of course, 9/11 and Boston Marathon, the Florida nightclub. So, at the end, actually, at the end of the parents and teachers part, I give 88 things to do with kids to help them build resilience. And then at the end of the children's part, I have 10 things that kids can do to help themselves to become more resilient. From getting a good night's sleep and getting exercise and eating healthy to not watching violent media, to being tolerant to kids in school, you know, not like disliking kids because of how they're dressed, but being, you know, more tolerant, looking at what's in their heart, being more tolerant, and so on. So that's kind of it's you know, it's people. I love doing talks about this with parents and kids or teachers and kids because it takes away the scariness of it, and yet it makes them, I talk about why they want to kill us, you know, how that some, they misinterpret their religion, which is kind of being a little generous.
I was going to say, how do you explain that? No wonder you have several degrees.
There is a saying, or there is a way of looking at it. I mean, I do say that, like on my podcast, Terrorist Therapist Podcast, I always have to remind myself to say, not all terrorists are Muslims, and not all Muslims are terrorists. But, you know, the truth is that we also don't see a lot of Muslims protesting these protests, you know, saying that this is wrong. But
Do we see any?
Yeah. Well, there was something in Europe. I mean, that's the thing, by the way. In America, we are so sheltered from what's really going on. First of all, anytime there's an attack, even if it's something, there was just one recently, like a lot of ramming attacks. That is a typical terrorist strategy, you know, to because it takes nothing. You don't have to figure out how to build a bomb. You just, you know, drive your truck or a big car into a group of people on the sidewalk. And yet, when things like that happen, and like the one that there was in New Orleans at the beginning of the year, and he had a flag in the back of his truck that was clearly an ISIS flag. It was black and white. It wasn't, you know, originally it wasn't unfurled, but you could see what it was.
Yeah.
And yet the media and the authorities, the police, they don't want to say that these attacks are terrorism. So they, you know, wait forever, and then they don't show a picture of the perpetrator. And but if people were so protected by mainstream media, if people in America knew what was happening in Europe, and it's online, it's not like they can't know, they just don't look for it very much. But Europe is already, the radical Islamist migrants that have taken over Europe, France and England in particular, Belgium, Germany, you know, they are like finally waking up that they let too many radical Islamist migrants in,
mm-hmm.
and they are trying to have their own caliphate, and they're very
well. London had the no go zones at the beginning, and that's been years ago. It's like,
yes.
Hey guys, that should be a heads up. You have places your own citizens can't go.
Yeah, and they set up their Sharia law, and
oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yes, Sharia law, and in Texas now, you know that they're trying to set up an area, a whole commune. And so far, that's kind of, I don't see many people of any kind of religion or any from anybody protesting that. You know, this was actually on 9/11 when I started, you know, going to conferences and so on and learning from the people who have been learning about terrorism, knew about terrorism for years. They said back then that what terrorists are planning to do, and they were already starting, was to infiltrate, not just do a 9/11 attack, but to infiltrate the media, schools, the law, and they have been doing that.
Check, check, and check.
Very successful politics.
Yeah, yeah, they've done quite well in their plan.
So even though this was known, you know, 20 some odd years ago, it was allowed to happen.
Because it can't happen here, right?
Right, right.
Well, they've always been masters of the long game. You know, they got nothing but time on their hands.
Yes,
and they plan, and we don't. You're right. We don't identify what it's going to be like down the road, and do anything about it. We wait till it develops into an issue, and then we react, and that doesn't work out real well.
So which psychological profile causes that? Is it that we have our head in the sand, which is the nice way of putting it, or that we basically, we don't wish anybody ill for the most part. Our society is sort of a, you know, live and let live for the most part. And so people don't really believe that somebody would secretly be, you know, sharpening their knife in the back room waiting for you.
Yes. Well, it's all of that. You know, and also people don't know history.
Well,
they don't know that it's 1,000 years ago that the plan of terrorists was to take over not just the West, you know, the West, but then all of the world. And they're doing a pretty damn good job of it. Because Israel, you know, Israel is the canary in the coal mine, but
mm-hmm.
it's not about just destroying Israel.
No, it certainly isn't. It goes all the way back, and just, you know, if someone's kind of curious about some of the history on this, we've got, I have no idea how many shows this is, 24 shows maybe, dating back to March of 2011, about Islam. And if somebody would like a good book, and you're thinking, well, you know, all this stuff is so heavily politicized and it's all opinion, there's a book called It's All About Muhammad, written by a guy named F.W. Burleigh. It's Frank Burleigh, B-U-R-L-E-I-G-H. Don't remember the year of that book, but I have it posted on we have a tab on the website that is Islam. So all the shows we did are all right in one place. They're free to listen to. They've got all sorts of backup. And this book is loaded with great information.
Oh, and it's all
annotated.
Annotated in the back, yeah.
So please do that.
Yeah, you can't put it down.
Holy cow, we're out of time. What? How does this happen? Dr. Kara Lieberman, we're sorry we have to run away.
Yes.
We'll miss you when you're gone. Thank you so much for spending time with us. We'll call you again on a different day.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Dr. Kara Lieberman, you can find her at wethepeopleradio.us. I cheated, Bill.
Yeah. Again.
Push the button. Yeah. Boom. No sound.
No sound.
It's silent. Just us. Guess we'll sing along. Ain't No Rest for the Wicked. Coming in anytime now.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good.